We're back, and joining me, John Mincone, actually former pro ball player. You guys may know him from Twitter at @JMincone, formerly of the Mets system, talking a lot of baseball. We're going to be talking Mets offseason here. And John, welcome to the program. I guess I'll start here. I don't know if you knew Buddy Harrelson. We were opening with Buddy Harrelson. You played briefly for the Long Island Ducks. Any thoughts about the passing of Buddy, any interactions with Buddy during your brief time in the Atlantic League?
Yeah, I've known him since before I even played there, you know, just from camps and things as a kid. When I was a kid, he's been around New York and Long Island baseball for a long time. So just from that aspect, it was, you know, it's tough. It was he was a big person in Long Island baseball. He was a big part of getting the Ducks to Long Island and professional baseball as a whole. But yeah, he was in the dugout at the time. He wasn't really, coaching as much, when I was there, but he was definitely in the dugout all the time. And he was an awesome person to be around, talk to. So that was definitely a tough loss for a lot of people and the baseball community here on Long Island.
Absolutely. So as we go through the off season, in the opening, I talked about, you know, ultimately when you listen to these executives talk, they don't really lie to you. They may talk in Ivy League speak or they may talk in riddles, but David Stearns was pretty open at the beginning of the offseason, said he was going to focus on run prevention, and he used one word, opportunistic. And I wonder if we're at that point. I mean, this has been one of the slowest offseasons I've been a part of. Maybe there's something to the reports today that has to do with, cable rights and things like that, but it's definitely a lot slower. Maybe it's the economy. It could be a lot of things. But I think this is the time where David Stearns can be opportunistic. I'm not sure if Blake Snell is that. I'm not sure if it's Jorge Soler. What are your thoughts? Give us kind of an overview of where you see the Mets right now.
Even before Stearns took over, I don't know if this was something that a conversation was had, you know, prior to him becoming the Mets president of baseball operations. But Steve Cohen, even at the trade deadline, said that they weren't really going to go out and do crazy things this offseason. And to that point, they haven't. So I think they've made a lot of moves that they had to bolster Syracuse and the 40 man and bring it in. But yeah, I think a lot of the offseason being slow were held up by Shohei and Yamamoto. You know, there were two guys that so many of the big money teams were on and had to see kind of how they were allocating their money, that a lot of things waited for them to fall, and a mix of that and next year's free agent class is huge. So I think a lot of teams are kind of gearing themselves up to make runs at some of those guys. So there are obviously Snell, Montgomery, which I saw something about, you know, him probably going back to Texas. I'm not sure of, but I would love for them to go out and get Soler. Right now, I think they need a big pitching guy. I mean, a big hitter, a big DH. Snell as a pitcher, I would love to have him. I wouldn't say no to him, but I don't know if any offer they would make him would kind of make him want to get off the West Coast right now. So I'm not sure, you know, if he's willing to take a 3-year deal, definitely. If he wants that life, end of his career ace contract, I personally would still go after him. And, you know, he's going to be an expensive 3 or 4 in the future, but he'll still be a solid 3 or 4. And money right now, unfortunately for the Mets and Mets fans, isn't really that much of an issue if they decided to do that. But I just don't know if there's enough there to really get him off the West Coast.
Yeah, I've heard reports that he's a West Coast guy. And then there's the draft pick capital, the international slot money. And that's always a tough thing. Like, I've always been someone about, hey, you figure out how to build your farm system. You always focus on your big league club. And, you know, I think that right now with the cost of players exploding, it's going to be critically important, even at least on the pitching side. You got to start bringing some guys up to come out of that bullpen. I mean, everybody's going to make – a good pitcher is going to make $25 million a year. Also, yeah, 30. You have to develop something. $15 million a year for Kyle Gibson. That's where it's at. It's not going back. So, you know, you take on a Snell, even if you get him at a really good 3-year deal with an opt out, high AAV, you are going to give up prospect capital. And then the interesting thing to, you know, as far as that with Soler, I was looking at Vientos and, you know, a lot of his peripherals are good. He hits the ball hard. He's obviously mastered AAA. He's at a point where either he's going to be 4A or he's going to be a big leaguer. And you never really have given him a chance if you're the Mets. So if you bring Soler in, even on a 1-year deal, you're perpetuating that. Because what is he going to play, third base? Maybe. I know he's working with Lindor. So it's interesting on those two fronts. You're hurting if you bring in either a Snell or Soler or both, you're actually hurting development, and you're going against one of the credos that Stearns had set out at the beginning of the offseason.
Yeah, I agree that this, I guess if there's a year to kind of work those things out, this would be it. Especially with them not going out and getting crazy names and making a lot of big moves, this would be the year to test those guys out. It stinks that Ronnie, got hurt. I would have loved to see him kind of get into it and develop his back. In my opinion, I think his bat's the most dangerous out of all of them. And I would have loved to see him get that year before 2025 and develop a little more. But yeah, it just depends. I think at this point, the Mets can still be a team that might sneak in on a wild card, can get to that, 84, 85 win mark. I don't think they're as bad as a lot of people are making them out to be.
I agree.
And to that point, I think that, a Turner or Soler would help kind of push that lineup over the edge and fill that gap that we had, last year at DH, where it was, I don't want to say an automatic out, but pretty close to it. But yeah, I from the pitching standpoint, I'd love to see Lavender up. He's been a guy that for the last couple of years, he's just pitched well everywhere he went. And that's almost like, what Paul Sewald did when he was coming through the Mets system and got to the big leagues. He had a little rough start with the Mets, but he just pitched his way through the minors and may not have had the flashiest stuff, but he gets outs. And, it wasn't for a few years until people realized, hey, it's not his stuff. It's his arm slot that is tricking a lot of the hitters. He's a low 90s guy, not a lot of movement. And gets away with it because of how he throws the ball. I think Lavender's kind of along that line. I'd love to see him up and making moves. They're starting, the starting prospects they have as pitchers, I'm not sure kind of if they're really ready or, some of them might get up later in the year with injuries. Hopefully there's no injuries.
Right.
But Lavender's definitely a guy that I would love to see up and kind of working out of the bullpen. And I would like to see him almost full year, like give him the chance to pitch and pitch through whatever he needs to and get ready.
Well, and I have John Mincone at J Mincone on Twitter, former professional baseball player now, basically on social media covering the game. You look at the game now, I call it the tournament era. I guess it's really always been with the wild card, but it's more so than ever now. And, Stern said something this week, and I thought about it with the team, and he referenced it in terms of the bullpen. The team in April, the bullpen in April is not what you're going to see in August and September. And you go back and you look at all these 85 win teams, 86 win teams. I mean, how many of them in this current modern era were under 500 in July? I mean, you could really, it used to be, hey, the first 50 games in the wild card era, you can mess around, figure it out. Think about how the A's did that one year when they had the 19 game winning streak. Now you get three wild cards. You could hypothetically mess around till late July and be around 500, maybe slightly, unless there's a couple of teams really running away with it, which in a three wild card scenario, I find that hard to believe. So if you're going to have a season where you could figure out Beatty, figure out Vientos, you brought up Lavender or maybe some of the young pitchers that, whether they're in the bullpen or not, there's a whole bunch of these roster invitee guys that have gone to Driveline that we're going to get a chance to see. I mean, you could probably do that and still make the playoffs, laying it out that that's what you're doing. Even when you're contending, you could do that to a certain degree. You don't want to, get into that situation every year, but it's really the game is not like it used to be. Everyone keeps talking about the Braves and the Phillies, and honestly, the division at this point, does it really matter? I mean, have we seen it matter? Maybe it matters a little bit probabilistically, but does it really matter?
No, I mean, you saw, look what happened to Arizona last year. I think they had 84 wins, right?
Yep.
And got to the World Series. It really, and the Phillies the year before. All it matters is you get there and get hot then. So to get, once you're in the playoffs, doesn't matter if it's wild card, division series. We've seen, division champions ousted in the division series last 2 years. So just getting in there and the best team in baseball, getting out of the first round. So just getting in there, and as you said, yeah, now you could be, you don't have to be running away with a division in July to kind of get to the playoffs. You have that. And going to the moves you just talked about, I kind of like those lower end reclamation project kind of guys, because now, God forbid somebody gets hurt on the staff, you're bringing up guys that at least have big league time, that are big league pitchers, instead of bringing up guys that were, double A, triple A guys, you're bringing up triple A big league guys. So if needed, the help that's going to come in and fill these spots here and there will be, more big league ready and ready to help you guys out in the long run, which a lot of people aren't pumped because they're not the sexy names. But I think, like as Stern said, building that triple A team matters because those are the guys that are going to come in and fill in spots, even if it's a day spot. Double
Yep.
headers happen. You need two extra arms. You got guys that were there before, not guys that you're seeing for the first time trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely. Absolutely, John McCone with me here. And I mean, they made so much about the pitching lab. I mean, everybody they've brought in this offseason on a non-roster deal, even at the most obscure name, has an elite pitch, seems to have something that you could point to that says, okay, whether it's an elite slider or an elite curveball. And, you're hearing, and again, sometimes these things become media narratives, these, mysterious labs, and everybody, thinks they could fix someone. But I keep saying, everybody, look, at some point, guys go to Houston and they figure it out. It can't all be Spider Tack, right? It can't all be Pelican Grip Dip. It can't all be that. Tampa, every year, you look at that bullpen and I just scratch my head. I'm like, how do they do it? I mean, it can't be some kind of magic formula here. Can't be when you put the. So you look at the Mets, maybe they figured it out with the lab. They're talking about the lab. I've heard names like Jose Buto going there. I worry a little bit because everybody's worried about velocity. And obviously, there's going to be trade-offs with velocity. Even Sean Manaea, his walk rate ticked up a little bit with the velocity uptick. Does that matter? I guess we'll see. But I think that it'll be interesting. This is really going to be the year. Can the Mets move into that Dodgers, Houston, even the Yankees to a certain degree, where these guys come over, even bullpen arms? And all of a sudden, it's like, how did Clay Holmes become that? How did he become that? And why couldn't the Pirates do that? And why can't the Mets do that?
So I think it's a good mix of one, the lab is fantastic. It's going to do incredible things to amplify the stuff that the guys, when they have these elite pitches, they spin, everybody feels the ball, spins the ball differently. Some guys are just, fortunate to be able to do it better than others in certain pitches. What the lab's going to do is help them identify that, improve that. And then you'll see a pitching development side of it come in and say, all right, great. You have this world-class pitch. Got to execute it now. So as you said with Manaea, his fastball jumped up 5 or 6 miles an hour. His walk rate did also. Hopefully now they can kind of hone that in to be like, great, here's your velocity. Now let's execute that fastball. And I think that's where the better Houston and the Yankees and Tampa, they've kind of had that great combination of the two. Some teams are very analytical where they're only focused on getting these pitches better. Some teams kind of are, I don't want to say old school because everybody uses the technology, but are only really like, all right, let's pitch, let's do this. The combination of the two, which the Mets seem to move in that direction with, Hefner's still there. There's a reason he's still there. He's great at that kind of game plan, execution, everything. And now the new pitching lab, I think the combination of the two will help them start pushing towards that.
You still believe in Brett Beatty, John?
I mean, listen,
That's a
he
lot of
tore
red
up where he
flags
tore
there.
up. It's a lot
A
of red
lot of
flags.
red flags there.
Defense is, I mean, obviously his offense was lagging behind, but just defensively, these guys need to come up and play somewhat serviceable defense. Listen, if you could hide Brett Beatty, who's one of the top
Maybe
prospects,
he's your DH. Maybe he
right?
becomes your
Listen, you could
DH if
hide
he
all these
hits.
guys if they play serviceable defense. You don't need every single person to come up and hit 40 home runs and hit three stuff. Like, listen, there are nine hitters too. There are eight hitters too. But be good at, be good at de like,
Something.
I want to say pick your struggle, but pick your struggle.
Yeah.
Whether it's hitting or defense, you gotta identify something that you're going to be elite at. Otherwise, as you've seen with so many top prospects, they're not around long. Being a top prospect's great when you come up, but it doesn't mean you're staying.
And look, you're a pro ball player. You know the mental struggle. What really, and I keep going back to this, and he admitted this to the reporters. Maybe he shouldn't have. I don't think he should have anyway. The game goes too fast for me, and I lose focus. Those two things are huge. The game being fast bothers me. The focus bothers me a lot. Now, that could be something he could work on from a variety of different ways. But the game being fast, that's a red flag because that's AAA, AA, V majors. And I mean, probably jumping just, the levels you jumped, how quickly the game changed there. And I
And
think you
it
were in
goes
big league
more.
camp. You probably saw some of the speed of the game at that point.
Right. And it's the game itself, it's not that the game itself speeds up, it's just mentally how you handle things. Pressure starts getting to you because you have more people in the crowd, you get louder noises, it matters more, you're facing better players. So it almost kind of tunnel visions you. And the better players can, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie For Love of the Game,
Yes.
when he, clears the mechanism
Clear the
and just
mechanism. Great movie, by the
slows
way.
himself down. That's, kind of what I tried to do my whole career when I pitched. It gets loud sometimes. It gets, even in Brooklyn in short season ball, there were 7,000, 8,000 people there and it got loud. And sometimes you just have to kind of tune it out and do what you have to do. College programs, top college programs deal with the same thing. So to that point, even when you start in the lower minors, they have people available for you to speak to, kind of talk through. They have breathing coaches, they have mental strength coaches, they have all these people available to seek out if that's a problem for you, and to, kind of work on it. If he didn't, and he knows that's a problem, then that's definitely a red flag for me. If, listen, some people can and can't deal with it. I've seen so many great players that just can't mentally get over certain things, and it's unfortunate, and that's the way it is. But as I said, if he can't figure it out, he's not going to be around long.
And
His name will only
he's
take him so far.
23. See, what bothers me is we're not talking about a 19-year-old. He's 23. Again, I'm not comparing him to David Wright, but David Wright was already an established star at 23. We're talking about a guy, Beatty, that was top 25, top 50, top 100 prospect, and I saw nothing there. And you're gonna put good again. You talk about Vientos, maybe you give him a shot. And that's part of this. Let's get to know what's in this organization over the first 50, 60, 70 games. But at 23 years old, I'm not saying you can't get better. You saw Daniel Murphy later in his career, things like that. But
Justin
you're
Turner when
starting
he
to
left.
become kind of who you are on some of the gears. And I also wonder, you as someone who was pre-analytics when you played, I mean, maybe it's just too much, some of this stuff. Like, I look at what they're going through, like, as a ball player. I remember the old, like in the NBA, let your instincts take over, like John Starks, let your instincts take over, be who you are. And I know that's not what it's all about, but with all this information, I see guys on the on-deck circle looking at iPads. I've talked to a couple of former big leaguers, some who are in the Hall of Fame, and they've said, I can't believe anybody would give me an iPad. And this is not going back to the 70s. We're talking guys who played 20 years ago saying, I don't want an iPad on the on-deck circle. And it's crazy. It's like, that's when you should be focused, zoning in. But it's there's so much information now. You wonder if that contributes to some of it.
I agree. And I saw an interview by Brian Snicker, the Braves manager, and the Braves were one of the teams that were really first big into analytics. Their front office really uses them, and they've done a great job of building their team up. And so from a fan perspective or a baseball player's perspective, I assume that, like, hey, like, all of them are into this. Snicker spoke after the season, or maybe it was last offseason, whenever it was, did an interview, was like, listen, some of the guys love it, and some of the guys, you tell them stuff and they're like, let me just go in the cage and hammer this out. He
Right.
goes, I let them do it. Like, we let them do it. And that's coming from a very analytic driven organization. And I think that's kind of how it has to be, especially at that level. Some guys got there, but you take a guy that played, guys in his their early 30s, mid 30s, whatever it is, and they played their whole careers. Now you're going to shove all the stuff in their face. They may not want it, and you shouldn't force that upon them. And the same goes for young kids. Some kids just grew up hitting baseballs in the backyard or hitting little, I grew up, I was a decent hitter, not great, but hitting little wiffle golf balls with a broomstick just for hand-eye coordination.
Right.
Some stuff like that. It's great that you have the technology there when you need it, but it shouldn't be something that's like forced upon every single player and have to look at it a certain way because everybody processes differently. I'm not saying they even do that with Brett. Brett's problem might be it's just a lot. New York pressure is a lot for people.
It's a
You've seen
lot.
so many great athletes, even established, Hall of Fame caliber athletes come to New York and kind of do and then leave and do great again. It's a lot to handle. Social media, it's a lot to handle the media, it's a lot to handle all the stuff that
Sure.
goes along with it.
And then I look at Alvarez learning the language, learning a skill position, getting accolades from future Hall of Famers. I mean, when Max Scherzer talks about the kid, like he talked about, that was my first, like, wow, okay, this isn't just a DH. Because you hear all the reports, and it's hard because, look, I'm not a scout. I didn't play ball like you. I try to be educated. I talk to people in the business, but I don't have that eye. I'm not, I didn't go to, train on that. I didn't play at that level. And you hear what people say, well, he's going to be a DH. You look at his body. I was like, wow, that's a fat guy. But I'm not down there. I don't see him in a locker room. And you look at everything he's done, the framing, the calling the game, working with Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame pitchers, and the bat struggled. That could be understandable in the second half, wearing down. And you look at that and you're like, well, that guy is where you want him to be, not 100%. You got the other guy who's not even off the ground. And they were both facing the same things. And in a way, Alvarez has so much more on his plate, with expectations as well. So just goes to show you the contrast between the two. And the risk, like going in 60 games in, we don't know where these Mets are going to be, but we're going to learn a lot about those two guys, assuming Beatty makes the club out of spring training.
Right. And his mindset, mentally, that's a big, it's a big difference. And you could, it's, I want to say it's a physical difference. You could see it though. You could see the way Alvarez carries himself to the way Beatty does. Beatty is, analyzing himself, overthinking things. Alvarez almost has that Pete Alonso mindset of like, yeah, screw it. Let's go out and play. Like, I love the stuff, y'all bring it. And that's the mindset
That's a great analogy. From day one, Alonso had no fear. He was
Nothing.
almost just like, I'm having fun here. This is
Right.
great.
You fail. All right, cool. We're working through it. Some guys fail and, kind of hide and say, what, why did I do that? Why? And some guys said, all right, I failed. So what? Let's not the next time. Alvarez's struggle second half could have been pitching adjustment. It's the major leagues. Again, with this technology, hitting and pitching, both sides are capable of making adjustments to each other. That's why I think Senga had, what Senga did was super impressive because he had a half a year for people to adjust, and then he came back and was better in the second half. Pitchers may have, a little easier time adjusting than hitters. Hitters have to face hitting, which is the toughest thing to do in baseball. But I think that biggest difference between those two is in the mindset. And honestly, I think Vientos has more of that, casual, just screw it, let's go see what happens kind of mindset, which especially in New York, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of things here as we wrap up. So first thing is, I think the offense will look a lot different if Starling Marte is healthy. Now, I know everybody likes watching winter ball on tape, on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. I remember a couple of years ago, Robinson Cano looked really good in winter ball. And the minute I saw that bat in spring training and the regular season, I'm like, the only time he hits the ball hard is the other way. That bat is slow. And he cannot keep up with a pitch. And sure enough, he was out of the game within 30 days. So it doesn't matter what you do in winter ball, you got to do it against the big time guys. But he looks like he's moving better. He is so important. When they lost him in September, I think this was talked about over and over, that offense looked different. I know he came back for the postseason and he played extremely hurt, which I got to give him credit. He shouldn't have been out on the field at all. Between the groins and he had the broken finger, and the groins alone would ground a lot of guys. But if he's healthy, and he probably shouldn't have been grounded most of last year to begin with, probably shouldn't have played at all. That could be a big lift. Now, maybe he's a step slower, maybe he's not exactly who he was, but he could hit. And getting him to hit in that right field spot with that arm, even if you have to spell him twice a week, just day game after a night game, maybe he's just barking a little bit. That would change this immediately and give Gilbert and Acuña, who are going to be at AAA, some time because you don't want to baiting them. I know, Gilbert will be hitting over 1,000 OPS come April 15th. I know what's going to happen. Everybody's going to want him up, especially if Marte's won for his first 15. I
Yeah,
already
Marte
see
be
it. That's
hitting
going to
well. If
happen.
he hits well, they're gonna want him up anyway.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think Marte is a big, a real big key to this offense.
No, I completely agree. It's just what I was talking about with potentially getting Soler or Turner, somebody to kind of fill these holes that the Mets had last year. Even in the year they won 101 games, if somebody went down, they didn't have somebody dynamic to kind of step up. So getting him back definitely changes the game plan from the pitchers. You have to pitch to him. You don't have that, oh, it's like Beatty or Vientos kind of, breath of fresh air that you had last year with that lineup. Hopefully those guys are hitting and it's not like that. But with Marte back, it's a legitimate major league bat that now you don't have that auto out kind of coming up, or a Vogel back where you can say, all right, like, no problem. He's going to be looking at strike three here anyway. It just makes everybody kind of more on edge, on guard. It makes their game plans differently, and it protects the other hitters in the lineup as well, for sure.
And I don't think their starting rotation's that bad either. Look, I know that, Senga and Ace, maybe he's miscast a little bit there. Maybe you got a lot of number threes, Quintana, Minaya. I like Joey Lucchesi. I mean, maybe they can't go more than 5 or 6 innings. I mean, that's possible. And that's where the bullpen comes into play. I'm not as sold on Tyler McGill, but we'll see. They seem to have a lot of depth now, even with the kids that'll be, potentially Vasil. Maybe Christian Scott, even if those guys turn out to be, like we said earlier, fours and fives, I don't like quantity over quality. Absolutely would love an ace, would love a vintage Scherzer out there, vintage DeGrom. Yamamoto would have looked really nice, in theory. We don't know what he really is. But I don't think their staff is all that bad. And look, if you go into history, you could win with bats, timely hitting, good defense, an okay starting rotation, and if they shore up the bullpen, and that's where I'm curious if they're going to go after a Robertson or a Chapman or maybe somebody who's legitimately could be a closer, not the, you know, in theory, value guys. You know, I'd feel better. In a lot of ways, I'd feel better if they upgraded the bullpen a little bit than maybe if they got Soler, because I think you could find that bat, you know, maybe a little bit easier than you could find an elite closer backup to Diaz to a certain degree, you know, at cost and things like that.
So the way their staff set up now, I actually don't mind it. As I said, you know, I said it the other day, I think, like, they're not that far off from that 101 win season. And obviously they don't have Scherzer. They don't have that one, like that one, but they have Senga, who's a 1-1A to somebody else. If you get, you know, an ace guy in, then you have Quintana, who's a solid 2. And then you have kind of 3-4, 3-4 and a 4-5, which I would take any day over a 1-1 and 5-5-5 after that, which they kind of had when they had Peterson and McGill and all those guys starting games. McGill is a starter. But I'd love to see if they can figure it out and get him in like a Trevor Williams role like we had, eat innings out of the bullpen, and spot start if needed, because I think Trevor Williams was so important to that 101 team. I did not like see him go. You know, again, not a flashy, sexy name, but he was a horse for them that year. And they need that, again, especially with a rotation that may not be going more than 5 or 6 a lot.
So there's the movie Almost Famous. I'm going to say John Mincone had his own brush of fame with some 2015, 2016 Mets. I'm looking at the Brooklyn. You played with Brandon Nimmo. You played with Hansel Robles. Paul Sewald, who you mentioned.
Yeah.
Nothing salacious, but do you have any fun stories from your time in the Mets system, maybe, you know, that you want to share with the listeners? You know,
it was experiences,
guys that you hung out with, you know, things that, you know, baseball stories that, you know, you always take. Thomas Nito is on one of your teams, and Jerry's Familia. You know, you got a good collection. Seth Lugo, who of Mets from the last 5-6 years?
Yeah, pretty much every, you know, especially in spring training, I was close with Steven Matz just from being on Long Island.
Sure.
I've known him since we were younger.
I got criticized. Yeah. I love the Mets to acquire him again. I think he's underrated. Yeah. I think that people wanted him to be something that he's not. He's a back end number 4.
Right.
Who could give you number 2. Sorry to interrupt, but I think he gets a bad rap because
I wonder if that would happen with the whole way everything shut down with St. Louis and Steve Cohen. I don't know. I don't know if he would go out and get him again.
Yeah.
But just from knowing him, I was, you know, he was best friends with DeGrom by the time I got over there. So hanging out with Jake and getting to just listen to him talk about pitching, and he was still in the minors at the time. This was before he even got called up. I was very fortunate when I was in the Mets organization. I think we led all of the minor league organizations in pitching categories, and like it wasn't even close. We were blowing people out of the water. Like our staff ERA in Brooklyn in 2012 was like silly. I don't even know if you have that
great
up right
now.
Great ballpark
to pitch in.
But even so, it was like a 3 or maybe under. Like it was a ridiculous staff ERA. We had Robles. We had
2.62. I just looked it up.
That was our staff ERA. Yeah.
It
was insane.
You had a pretty good year, 1.82 ERA, almost a strikeout per inning, you know.
Yeah.
You would get some talk on X if it was like what it was now, you know.
If it was, yeah. No, it was fun playing. I got to play again with a bunch of guys. Even the next year up, we had Ahmad Rosario coming up, and Conforto came in, and Floecki, and Nito, and Nimmo. Giselman was on the staff. We had a lot of great, great, great players coming up at that time, and it was a lot of fun to spring training. Like watching the baseball that was being played on our side fields in spring training was insane.
And that's crazy to think about the kind of pitching that the Mets had for a decade.
Yeah.
And I talked
Wheeler
about
in the minors
this
still, and
it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to replicate that. Like that's the big rub now. And that's the big challenge.
Yeah.
Like they've had to go out and buy and trade with Bassett and buy some more. And I don't think you could buy 5 good guys that you're going to get.
No, I've seen on Twitter all the time, people are like, well, what happened in 2013, 14, 15? Like, why can't we just do that again?
Not easy.
Because they had, when I signed there in 2012, they had Zach Wheeler, Matt Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard came over after, just like Sewald, Lugo, who was not known by anybody at the time. He was just, you know, a pitcher in the minors. Giselman developed. Robles ended up being pitched for a while. Dario Alvarez, who came through and had like the best season I've ever seen a human being have on a baseball field in 2014. But they had so many pitchers. Like organizations just don't luck into having pitchers like that. They had 4 aces in the minor leagues that doesn't happen all the time. So I was very fortunate enough to, kind of come up and play with those guys and watch them on side fields and hang out with them off the field. But yeah, we got spoiled with that run of guys coming through because that doesn't happen often.
So you're a former Mets prospect, and as I'm talking to John, he has a Mickey Mantle picture behind him. We know he likes Mickey Mantle. We know he likes Muhammad Ali, and he's an Arizona Cardinals fan. I got that one right?
A lot of that stuff just there's J.R. Lewis over there. I don't know, stuff my dad liked acquiring things when
So it's
he was going out with clients and at auctions, and I was fortunate enough that between my brothers we split a lot of it and I got some cool stuff.
So you got some cool, but you were playing for the Mets. Are you from, being from Long Island? Were you a Mets fan growing up? Were you?
I was a Mets fan growing up,
So
but
that was
again, it's
kind of a cool
always
thing.
yeah, it was really cool. So that was I thought they were going to draft me out of high school, then out of college again, and it ended up being the Cubs that kind of snuck in and took me, and they were the team that I didn't talk to. They were one of the few teams that I hadn't had conversations with, and I think the scout said he saw like a YouTube video that my dad had put out of me pitching
Wow.
in the draft room, and they decided to take before the next round. So that kind of snuck up. I thought it was going to be the Mets initially, and I was, very fortunate. Well, unfortunately, after my dad passed, that the scout reached back out, invited me to a local workout, and I ended up throwing for him, and they signed me right after that. But it was really cool getting to play in Brooklyn, especially. Because at that time, right after my dad passed, my mom was able to take my brothers, get out of the house, come down, watch games. My family
Who were
was
the
able to come
managers you
out.
played for when you were at the Mets system?
So Rich Donnelly was the manager in Brooklyn there. Mark Valdez was my pitching coach. And then when I went to Savannah, Mark came with us as a pitching coach, and it was Louie Rojas. So
Oh,
it
so
was,
you knew
yeah.
a little bit about Louis, you know.
Oh, I played for Louie there. I played for him in St. Lucie. When I decided to retire, I became really close with Louis. He called me in his office and had like a 2-hour conversation with me before I actually told them that I was not going to be playing anymore, just trying to kind of talk me out of it and saying,
Right.
all the soft
Wrong
play.
place, wrong time for Louis Rojas with the Mets. Wrong situation.
I still think he's one of the best baseball guys out there. That's why he's, still out there. I think, yeah, had it been a different season, different everything, but as a manager, I still think it was just a rough spot for him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even hate if at some point he was back at some, I could see him managing someone.
Absolutely.
But one of the nicest guys, one of the smartest baseball guys around. So I had them. Who was in Double A? Is it Pablo Lopez? One of the guys from
Probably.
Double
That
A.
was during the Pablo.
Yeah,
He was and he was
Pilo was
highly
there.
regarded for a while too,
Yeah,
so I'm
he was great. I was very, and the pitching staff, the pitching coaches that they had there, Frank Viola was still in Triple A, Mark Valdez, Phil Regan was in St. Lucie when I
Phil
was there.
Regan, yeah.
So just so many great, and that feeds into why that, those pitchers were so good at that time too. They just had an outstanding staff of guys around them to talk to, Royce Ring came in my last year. Just
Royce
guys
Ring.
that were there that, we just got to hang out and talk to. And, as you got older and you see them out, you could even kind of hang out with them while you were out and talk to them
Right.
wherever you were. But they were so open and so available to helping everybody and talking to any, no matter how good they were. Sandy Koufax was around our complex a bunch working with Chris Young when he was rehabbing. He was
Sure.
somebody that they were close with. And even him, like the people that they had in that organization at the time was just fantastic. And it showed through that pitching staff.
And you, as someone who went through the system, you have to feel for a guy like Ronnie Mauricio, whether it's true or not, that his agent stole his money. That here he is playing winter ball, gets hurt. I
Yeah.
get it. An ACL, just like with Diaz, I always feel it was going to happen. Just happened to
Yeah,
happen.
a lot
It's
of it
kind of like a
is.
car's going to break down. Yeah,
Right.
it broke down. Why did you have to drive it to go to the store 2 miles? Couldn't you have walked? Well, it was going to break down eventually, so that was just happened to
Right.
be the time, you know?
Yeah, I tore mine and when I was in with the Cubs organization, and doctors said the same thing. They're like, it was just a matter of time. There's nothing you could do. You don't know until it's done. It's not like I had an
Sure.
achy knee. It just happened.
Right.
But going back, yeah, I don't know what happened with his initial agent, but from being around and knowing guys that signed, I was very close with a lot of Dominican players. Especially in the lower minors, a lot of them are trying to learn the language. They want to be because it's they just like learning. And that's something that whether or not it happened to him does happen quite often. A lot of them got taken advantage of, especially some of the bigger signing guys. It's unfortunate, but they don't, they're happy to get signed and they're happy to get
Sure.
this and they're
Sure.
told that this is the way it goes. And
Yep.
and they talk to their friends and it happened to their friends. So they don't think, any different. They just assume that that's kind of how it goes. And it's an unfortunate thing. Hopefully,
Absolutely.
it didn't happen to him specifically, and that was all, made up just for his sake. But it's definitely something that is not known at all. It's very well known in in professional baseball that that is something that just happens.
Last thing. So, is it true I saw next that you said you never officially retired? And if you showed up, so you could show up to Port St. Lucie next month and potentially throw your hat in the ring and say, you know what? I'm a non-roster invitee. I can make this club. Look, it's an
I
open
mean,
competition.
I'm sure it'd be in the minor league side because I'm not getting a big league contract, but I'd probably show up and be like, all right, here's your release papers. But yeah, I had some shoulder issues at the time, and my agent was like, listen, Seattle and Houston, both of them were like, you can get in your car right now and drive to their AAA team, and like, you'll be up by next year. They want you up. And I had asked for my release, and I stayed. The Mets basically said no. Dickie Scott called back and was like, he was running, the minor leagues at the time, and said, we're not giving you your release. So,
Wow.
they paid for me to stay in Florida for 2 weeks, kind of. And, I kept throwing with guys on the side. I didn't show up to the complex, but I kept throwing with them, stayed in shape. And I was like, I'm just done. That's when I went and had a conversation with Louie, and they'd asked me to sign a voluntary release form or a voluntary retire form. I said, no. I was like, I'm not, I don't know if I want to, what's going to happen. I don't want to sign a retire form and have to deal with any kind of logistics going forward. Or so, yeah, technically they never released me and I never signed a voluntary retiring form. So
You're in baseball. You're
I'm
in
kind of
Mets
in baseball.
baseball. That's great. Mets
Exactly. That's exactly where
baseball.
I'm at. So if I showed up, they'd either, obviously after this point, I'm not going to play. I'm not,
Oh, come on.
whatever.
That's an impractical jokers. That's an imp I got to get the impractical
I've
jokers
been
guy
thinking
in.
about just showing up just for the content of it because it'd be funny.
That would be
But
funny. If you had the cojones to do that, I would love to see that on X.
I got to imagine I kind of show up, say hi to the clubhouse guys, and within
Yeah.
minutes somebody would run out and give my release form. Be like,
There
all
you
right, you
go.
can go
They would
now.
be right. David Stearns might run on himself and say, get this
Yeah.
guy out. We don't want to pay him. It's another expense thing. Well, John, this has been fun. Let's do this again. So what do at Jay
Absolutely.
Mincone on X, Twitter, whatever they want to call it. I always get confused. What do you
Yeah,
got
same
coming
for
out? I know
Twitter.
you're trying to get, your social media,
Yeah.
your baseball analysis out there. What's the plans in the next few weeks going into the season for you?
So, I've started Brella over the last few months and have been building up. It's kind of like a social media company. Have some really cool podcasts joining up, not just in baseball, but some entertainment, some comedians coming out, like decently well-known people. So it'll be a fun ride, but that'll be kicking off in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to talking to you again. This has been great. Be well and enjoy the baseball season as it comes. We'll talk again. All right, John?
You as well. Thanks so much.
And that's John Mincone, former Mets minor leaguer at Jay Mincone on Twitter. Another show on the book. So like I said, next week, Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. I'm going to get my Hall of Fame ballot out there. I'm sure if you're a subscriber to Be on the Mic on X, at Mike Silva Media, you could get my ballot. You could get, what I'm going to be talking about with the Hall of Fame. We'll probably, like I said earlier, talk a little bit about Reyes and Wright who are on the ballot. Remember them a little bit. But, ultimately, we're going to have our Hall of Fame show like we do every year. We'll see where the rest of the offseason goes. We've talked about the Mets being opportunistic. I'm not sure we're really going to see a ton the rest of the offseason, but remains to be seen. I think the one thing, and I've been saying this, for a while, be open-minded because I don't think you know what's going to happen. And it's quite possible that, something comes out of left field. The Mets are the kind of team with their money, with their president of baseball operations slash GM and Stearns, that I think no stone is going to be unturned. So it'll be really interesting to see with the rest of the offseason where it brings us. But we're in the opportunistic phase of the offseason. We like to label. You guys hate the whole getting to know you phase. I know someone complains sometimes. Not more than one person complains. Says, I don't want to hear about getting to know you phase. Well, we're going to have the getting to know you season. So I don't care what you guys say. It's the getting to know you season 2024. And there'll be the phases. And then there's the, what do they need phase and go get it done phase and things like that. So, we'll do that. So I just made another phase up here, the opportunistic phase of the off season. So anyway, maybe we'll coin that and use that. Sorry. All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us on another edition here of the Talking Mets podcast. I want to thank John Mincone for joining it. You can check me out all the time at the Talking Mets at the Talking Mets podcast.com. Get me on X at Talking Mets No G. No more Mike Silva Media at Talking Mets No G. And you can show it up on podcast, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You could also get me on Substack, Beyond the Mic newsletter. Check it out, Substack.com/@TalkingMets, no G. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from Fanside and Podcasting Network for hosting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another show next week. Till then, take care.